So we just had the Thanksgiving holiday, and I thought I'd talk a little bit about that, and about gratitude, and how to remember what's most true and what sustains us. Last week, Shinshu and I were down in at Zenjuji Temple in Los Angeles for the meeting of the Association of Soto Zen Buddhists, which is, as many of you know, an organization of American and Japanese Soto Zen priests. I want to say thanks to Randy for giving the Dharma talk last week while we were away. I'm sure that everyone gained a lot for it, so thanks. Thanks, Randy. The meeting in L.A. was rich with reminders of gratitude and thanksgiving. For one thing, it's really, really important that we remember all the people who carried this tradition to us. And at a Japanese-American temple in L.A., the first in this country, there's reminders everywhere of that. And we spent time with old friends who share the love of the Dharma and are dedicated to doing their best, our best, to live out the Soto Zen tradition. We did a number of ceremonies and listened to talks by a teacher via Zoom from Japan about a ceremony that's going to happen next year, the Jukai ceremony that's going to happen to honor the 100th anniversary of Soto Zen in this country. And we had meals together and walks together, and it was just alive with mutual support. There's a rich tapestry of connection, and we don't get to see each other that often. Some people were new, and they were welcomed in to take their place among all of us. And the one ceremony, Ryuki sent out a link for those of you that could watch it. Some of you, I think, watched it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very vigorous. And lots of fun. These ceremonies that we do are filled with friendship and communication and dedication. And so if you have a chance to watch it, please do. Lots of loud chanting and fanning and all kinds of cool stuff. At some point soon, I'd like to talk some more about our relationship with the Japanese Soto Zen tradition. I really want to do that because I think there's much to be explored there, but maybe the next time. Maybe the next time I talk, not today. So I want to return to this subject of Thanksgiving. I think we're all aware that it's a very complicated holiday, filled with stereotypes and myths, skewed history, and handy versions of what was and what is, and we should never ignore that. It's important for us to stay awake to what we've received. But it's also, I think, possible to focus on the quality that many of us have come to associate with the day and use that particular day as a time to reflect on our relationship to our experience of gratitude and what it means for us in Soto Zen practice and how we cultivate it. The word gratitude is derived from the Latin word gratus, meaning grace or graciousness or gratefulness. Brother David Stendelrast, who a Benedictine monk who I admire quite a bit, has a book called Gratefulness, the Heart of Prayer, and has a website completely devoted to gratefulness. It's really wonderful teaching. So this word is, it's not just an emotional state that we want more of because it feels good. It's a challenge and a path of practice. So often our lives are shadowed or even filled with what we see as missing. What is off or bothersome are not up to our ideals. I wonder what's happening out there, or if you guys can hear that or not, but it's maybe a big truck or something. Thank you, Shinshu, for closing the window. Bothersome, right? Not ideal. Can we be grateful for the truck in the parking lot? So our response to these things can be anything from petty grumbling to deep pain, and this can take particular forms, especially this time of year. So you go to the grocery store and you buy a can. I don't know if you all eat this, but in my family we always have a can of cranberry jelly, you know? And then they sell a kind with berries in it. And so maybe you go to the store and you're in a hurry and you grab a can and you get to Thanksgiving dinner and it's got cranberries in it. And we never eat cranberry jelly with cranberries in it. And it's like, damn, I wanted the old-fashioned cranberry jelly with no cranberries in it. Grumble, 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 right? So that's like this petty thing. On the other end, we might be alone on the holidays and imagine that everybody else has got this, what, June Cleaver kind of family where everybody gets along and it's really fun and there's lots of food and there's no inconvenient relatives or political divisions or, you know, and this can, as we know, can bring on great suffering. And any annoyance or suffering that we experience can be compounded enormously this time of year. And our minds can reinforce a sense of separateness and lack. Our days and nights can be colored by this. Our field of vision can get limited or even blocked by a focus on what isn't, on what's lacking, what doesn't fit, what interferes with the experience that we hope for or expected. And we can miss the richness of the experience that we have, which includes, by the way, the experience of something being missing, you know? How many times have we heard this? How many times have we heard, you know, that our vision gets limited by this focus on lack? Do we hear it? And what do we do when we're in the midst of something like that? So it's important for me to point out that I am not saying we do not change the things in our lives that are truly harmful or debilitating. Some of us lack the very basic needs: a warm place to sleep, enough food, safety. We must attend to that in ourselves and in others. We must address that lack. But often we have many of the things that we need. Sometimes we have more than we need, but are stuck still with this sense of lack. A suffering based on what is not. And again, this compounds our suffering. When we allow that to happen, we cannot find our way to a sense of peace or joy or gratitude for what we do have. And this, we must remember, is a very human thing to do. It's a very human thing to do, to focus on what isn't and miss the richness of the experience. So there has to be a sense of acceptance, inclusion, kindness. And at the same time, we have to address this effectively. And the thing that's interesting is that effective action is blocked by an incessant focus on what is missing. So it's like this, like, right? If we focus in this way, don't we build a world of wrongness and feel ourselves diminished and at a loss? So it's an interesting place, you know? It's an interesting place to look at what's missing, to be honest and clear, and address what needs to be addressed. And at the same time, to expand our vision out and see what is there. The other thing about this is that when we allow ourselves to be shrunk down in this vision, we're living in a wildly inaccurate world, at least according to the Buddha Dharma. We are not separate from all that is. When we expand our vision, we can see this. And we can allow the reality of our existence to become apparent to us. Our lives are supported by many, many, many lives. Right? People lives, rock lives, spoons and plate lives, carrots and trees, rivers, houses, deer, cats, peanut butter, bread lives. Seeing this naturally gives rise to gratitude. From a Buddhist perspective, from our tradition's perspective, gratitude is not understood to be me being grateful for things, but a recognition that these categories of me and things are not, it's inaccurate. It's me things. Me life, peanut butter life. Me life, ocean life. Together. We are living only because of the activity of all being. The dynamic whole of this reality is our life. I've talked about this word, this Japanese word, on before, but I think it's worth coming back to again. It's a term that includes both a sense of gratitude and a desire to repay others for what we have been given. This, that we are given our breath every moment. This on can be present in any circumstances, even in the most dire. It is not a harsh statement. It's not like you should be grateful. It's just a fact. It's a recognition of reality and a desire to awaken to it. and a desire to give back, to respond, to bring beauty and connection and aliveness to this world, to actually do something. I think this is one of the things that was so alive in the ceremony that we did at Senchuji 2 and bring a rapid end to COVID. You know, it was vigorous. Then we pick up the sutra and it's die! And then you say go when you put it down. It's like you have this. You have vigor. And Akiroshi was the central figure. Some of you can't see it, but it's like, you know, his chanting was so powerful. We were like with him in this. You know, heart, full heart. Like, we want this. We want this to come to realization. We're alive with the reality of the suffering in this world. But there's a joy in it, an energy and a joy in it. Cultivating and expressing this spirit of on in our lives is not just a nice thing to do. It changes our world. How we see it, how we experience it, how we live in it, and as our world changes, the world around us changes. I mean, I've said this before. You walk into a room where there's acrimony and you're solid and grounded and you feel generous and kind, what happens to the energy in that room? It changes. You're not in control, but you're a part of it. This is the spirit of Om. This is the spirit that allows us to center ourselves and act from that center with clarity, purpose, and occasionally joy. We experience ourselves as embraced and sustained, and we find courage. This spirit allows us to recognize and deepen our sense of community, of communality, of togetherness. So it's a pleasure to be together cultivating this, isn't it? Yeah, it's a pleasure. We inspire each other this way. So I think we all like to look to people that inspire us. People we live with, people we see on the streets, people we may never meet. Yesterday, Shinchu and I were visiting a dear friend who lives in Sonoma, and he built this altar, and he's been ill for a long time. He's doing better now, surprisingly better. Yeah, I've spoken of him before. He's a quiet man. He doesn't write books. He'll never be famous. He inspires me. His deep practice, his dignity, his generosity, the way he can make things with his hands of such beauty. His partner, too, inspires me. She is a Zen priest and a hospice chaplain. And simple. Alive. To the extent that we focus and keep central what is lacking in our view, we populate our world with that. What we see, what we feel, how we are with others, we populate that with a sense of lack. Lack is what we see, what our lives are filled with, and what colors our relationships to others. This is samsara. This is suffering. If we shift our focus and we attend to all we are given in each moment, we live in a different world. a world that is not dominated by a sense of what isn't, but instead is alive with what is. We don't ignore the hardships and loss and difficulties experienced by ourselves and others. Those losses and hardships take their place in this context. Yeah? In our Soto Zen practice, along with appreciation of all that comes to us in this spirit of on, is a sense that the phenomena in the world are not there to serve us. They have a life and a beauty of their own. In other words, we are not the center of the universe. When we see this, we become curious and alive to the other. We have a sense of the other, not as alien to me, not separate from me, ultimately, but with an appreciation for the life, the trajectory, the unique movement, the right and worthiness of each phenomena. Each one worthy of my respect, my reverence. When we see in this way, the door to gratitude opens. Yeah. And we can be taught by this. We can be taught by peanut butter beings and rock lives and ocean lives. We do not denigrate the other. It's pretty simple, but it's demanding. Dogen's Fascicle Gyoji Continuous Practice says, even when you are uncertain, do not use this one day wastefully. It is a rare treasure to value. Do not compare it to an enormous jewel. Do not compare it with the dragon's bright pearl. Key to this is, even when you are uncertain, wobbly, filled with lack. Do not use this one day wastefully. It is a rare treasure to value. So these are the kinds of phrases that we can reflect on as a means of facing the depth of our Zen practice, connecting with all beings. Can help us reorganize our reality. We can study and think about, live out these words. But think about each word. It's always a good practice. And we can also have specific practices in our day-to-day lives. Not just special times. During the break, I just stood outside. The sun is so beautiful. And it's not raining. At the same time, I'm like, this is so beautiful. And we were just up in Sonoma, and there's a certain quality of quiet stillness up in Napa and Sonoma that I remember from my parents lived there for a number of years. And there's something about the color of the vines and the stillness there. It's just something. And we need the rain. And so that both of those things at the same time, right? So we stop and pay attention with kindness and respect. We regard each thing, each aspect of our life as expressing its own nature, having its own life, its own arc of existence. We attend to how this shifts our attitude and experience and relationships. This is so important in relationship. Always curiosity, honor, respect. And then this allows some space for gratitude, for thanksgiving, genuine thanksgiving to come forward. So we don't force it. We include it all. Even during times when gratitude or thanksgiving seem far away. This is not rocket science. You don't need to be a saint. Got that? No saints. Just persist. Just persist. So three key things that I've spoken about before. Pay attention, be mindful, and pay attention to how you're mindful. Okay? Mindfulness can be corrosive and ugly. Don't make it that way. Make it heartfelt and kind. Regard each aspect of your life as expressing its own nature, giving to us its own nature. Oh, thank you. You can also trace back. Where did that peanut butter come from? Whose hands? You know, this is another practice. It's like each piece of clothing you have, each thing you eat, whose hands have touched that? I have on my wall a wooden spoon that was my great-grandmother's. Yeah, it's a lovely, long wooden spoon. I probably should use it, but I'm kind of attached to it, so I don't. I'm sure she used it a lot. Whose hands touched that over all these years? Whose hands touched this? Regard each thing as in each aspect of your life as expressing its own nature, giving to you and to the world. Cultivate a spaciousness in your mind and heart that allows gratitude some room to breathe. Just a little bit. Open the door a little bit. When we think about other ways, these are just three aspects of this. Think about ways in which you can cultivate this. And in this way, we turn toward the world in the spirit of continuous practice. We are continuous practice. All being is continuous practice. Arising moment after moment, giving moment after moment. Gratitude, oh thank you, moment after moment. We realize that our Zen teachings challenge us to realize this. Radical gratitude with an intelligent base. Radical gratitude with an intelligent base. Knowing on in our bones and expressing it in our actions. In this way, I think we have the ability to become grateful for everything in our life. There is nothing outside of our thanksgiving. So I suggest we take time this time of year to do concrete practices of cultivating gratitude and also infuse our lives with a curiosity about what that means. Thank you.